The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
It's Victor Dandridge, the hardest working man in comics, and you are listening to PVB Cast with John Orlando. Guys, I'm telling y'all it's the best thing on the entire interweb. Listen long, listen strong. John, it's all you, man.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 205. I hope you're doing well out there as you're listening to the podcast. I am doing great. I am very excited for this weekend. And why, you ask? Because I am going to go to Monroe Pop Fest. You might know it better under its name, the Monroe Comic Con, which was its name for the last couple of years. They just changed it this year. It's going on this Saturday, September 14th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. up in Monroe, Michigan at the MBT Expo Center. If you need more details, check out MonroePopFest.com. Brian Lau is going to be there. I'm going to be hanging out with him, helping him work the table. And we haven't done that in a little bit, so I'm excited to be back helping Brian tell everybody about Staunch Ambition and, of course, Inferno City Firehouse. But they have some big names coming. James O'Barr, creator of The Crow, is going to be there. Movie star Tyler Mane, who is probably best known as Sabretooth in the X-Men films, the early X-Men films, and Michael Myers, one that I'm hoping I get a chance to chat with, the WWE's own Kelly. Kelly is going to be there, and I can't forget about one of the comic book men from AMC. Of course, I'm talking about Ming Chen. So it's a great time. It's a fabulous one-day event. If you're interested, like I said, check out MonroePopFest.com. Well, now that I talked about that, I need to talk about my guest who is appearing here on episode 205. She is an artist, an illustrator, and a comic creator from Cleveland. Her name is Claire Colat. And we're going to talk about a lot of her various different projects. She's probably best known for The Apple Knight and the Department of Final Fulfillment. But we're definitely going to touch base on all of her projects. And the weird thing is, Claire and I spoke a couple of years ago at Space. As a matter of fact, off air, we talked that her table was around the corner from Brian and I. And she came over and talked to Brian about Staunch Ambition, and I chatted with her. And I have no reason whatsoever to explain why she hasn't been on the PVD Cast. But you know what? I reached out to a bunch of folks because I want to have some folks talk about not only their great projects, but also CXC, which is coming up at the end of the month. Claire is going to be at CXC, which of course is Cartoons Crossroads Columbus, the big cartoon and comics expo here in Columbus. And she was so nice to take a little bit of time out of her busy schedule to chat with me. So I'm going to get to that conversation here in just one moment, but I got to let you know that this episode is brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. They have tons of comics, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, and various other collectibles. So stop on over to the store, or you can check them out online at wgcomics.com, and they're even on Facebook. So you can find out all about the store just by going to facebook.com/WG Comics. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'm going to sit down with Claire Colat and talk about her many, many projects. All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the PVD Cast. And joining me this evening here, thanks to Uber Conference, Claire Colat. Claire, how are you this evening?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. You're an artist, an illustrator, a comic book creator based in Cleveland.
Yep.
I guess this is probably a stereotypical question, but since, you know, football season just started, are you a Browns fan?
Admittedly, I could not care less about football.
Okay.
And I really just like to laugh at the Browns because everyone thinks this is going to be the year and it never is. So I like to laugh at everyone saying, how could this have happened? And it's just like, well, because it always happens.
You know, there's no shame in that. We all have different interests, and I figured it might be a little bit of a stereotypical question, but it was on my mind yesterday when I was doing research to get my notes ready, and I was like, well, maybe you are a Browns fan, and since they weren't faring too well yesterday, I thought maybe I'd throw that question
in. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm one of like three people in Cleveland that doesn't care about football.
Well, I want to find the other two because that would be a very interesting interview as well. So as an illustrator, I always kind of ask comic book creators and illustrators, have you always kind of had the knack for drawing? Have you always had the bug to draw?
Oh, yeah. It's always been there ever since I was a little kid. My grandma would buy me coloring books and I would sit down and finish them in one afternoon. She would always laugh about it. I just always had a drive to draw everything.
If I may ask there, as you went on in your academic career, you followed that passion?
Oh yeah, absolutely. All through grade school, I loved my art courses, everything that I could get my hands on, every material and every course that I could take, I took it. And once I got into high school, you know, my art teacher said, you know, like, hey, maybe you should consider going to art school. And I was just like, really? That's a thing? It hadn't occurred to me that like I would go to school for it.
So who are some of your inspirations with your art?
Oh, geez. I don't even know where to begin. I find inspiration in everything that I look at, everything that I do. I, you know, find inspiration in a lot of retro illustrators and like retro product designers. So a lot of like mid-century stuff, I pull a lot of inspiration from that. A lot of Japanese influence, like, you know, shoujo manga and, you know, anime. I grew up watching Sailor Moon. That was my great passion, Sailor Moon and, you know, Cardcaptor Sakura. So it was all kind of baked into me from an early age.
Gotcha. I gotcha. So how would you maybe describe your artistic style then to those that are listening?
I would say it's very kind of retro, cheeky. I draw a lot of very femme figures, and I really am inspired by animals and flora, like the natural realm in general. I find really inspiring, and Mother Nature's real crazy, so you can find some really interesting stuff to work with. So I draw a lot of inspiration from the natural world and my very feminine and retro influences growing up.
Okay. Were there any particular artists that really spoke to you as you were growing up and going through school and whatnot?
Well, I did always find inspiration from, like I said, like the manga artists. So a lot of Clamp was really a big influence for me. And as far as like classical artists, you know, I grew up by the Cleveland Museum of Art, which has an incredible collection of all kinds of artists. So I, you know, draw from a lot of, I learned a lot of, you know, my figural drawing from like the old masters, kind of things like my, like these chubby pinup girls I always do. People always think that they're very Rubenesque. I don't know if I should compare myself to someone like that, but I really like pulling from old art like that, finding my influences from all kinds of different little corners.
With that, so real quickly, the statements you made that many of your drawings of individuals is more Rubenesque. Is that a conscious decision to be a little more? Because I mean, I think nowadays, and again, times have changed, I think, in the art world where, you know, before maybe figures were drawn more thinner. I guess we're living more in a body positive type of society. So is that a small reason maybe behind some of that, or is that just always how you've always approached drawing figures?
No, it's a little, well, it's a little bit of both. I like variety. Okay. I like seeing lots of, I love the variety of the human form that, mm-hmm. you know, people look all kinds of different ways. So I want to make sure that I represent that in my art, that, you know, the people that I see in my life are the people that I put into my art.
I got you. I got you. You got, is there a friend trying to sneak into the, yeah, into the podcast here? We have,
yes, I have a cat. I have a couple cats, and this one, Gus, really, I call him my familiar because he will not leave me alone. And no matter what I'm doing, he has to be within like 3 feet of me at all times. Otherwise he's just screaming. So if he starts yelling at any point during the recording, I'm very sorry.
No, that's all right. That's all right. His name was Gus, you said?
Yeah, Gus.
Gus, you're welcome to come on the podcast too. Why not? I mean, it would be a first for me.
He would be very happy. He's very loud.
So is it fair to say that your favorite genres are probably science fiction and fantasy? Because as we'll talk about your projects and your books here in a few moments, but they all seem to have a little bit of a flair of science fiction and fantasy.
Oh, absolutely. I always said that my parents raised me to be a nerd, and I didn't stand a chance. You know, as a kid, like one of my favorite movies was Planet of the Apes. You know, I would, you know, jump around my living room, you know, playing out stories from, you know, that universe. And I don't know any other kid that did that. So, you know, like Star Wars and, you know, Labyrinth and, you know, Dark Crystal, which just came out and I'm very excited about, you know, things like that. I just really was drawn to from an early age.
Okay. Can I ask, what is the best Planet of the Apes in the original series, not the new ones that they've done, which have been fabulous. Those I think are by all means really, really well done. But what about the original ones?
I like the first one. Like they're okay. All gems in their own right because they all become these horrible nightmares of
yes.
storytelling. But I mean, the first one is obviously my favorite, but if you set any of them up, I will watch any of them. I love horrible sci-fi.
Well, let's talk about a couple of your books here. The first one I'm going to mention is The Apple Knight. And according to the description, it's based on a Japanese fable. So could you maybe summarize a little bit of what the book's about and maybe even that Japanese fable for the listeners at home?
Absolutely. So Apple Knight is an adventure story about a wandering warrior who comes to a forest and is approached by the guardian of that forest and is asked to defend it from this horrible monster that is terrorizing the land. So obviously they stick around to help out, and I'll let everyone understand the rest of the story when they pick it up at CXC.
There you go. There you go. So where'd you find out about the Japanese fable real quick? Was it something that was lore in other anime or manga?
It was actually a book that I had as a kid, and it was one of my favorite books. It was this old collection of Japanese fables and fairy tales that was, I think, published in like the 20s. I don't know where this book came from. It was my mom's, and she got it from somewhere when she was a kid. But yeah, it's just this very like old decrepit book, like the pages are falling out, but I used to read it all the time. And it was full of like 6 or 7 different fairy tales. And I could basically recite it like word for word as a kid because I loved it so much. And one of them was a story called Lord Bag of Rice, which is essentially where the Apple Knight came from, which is the story of a wandering warrior who helps the leader of a lake defend the residents of the area against a evil monster that is trying to terrorize their town. So It just was a story. All of those stories always stuck with me, and I really loved the storytelling behind them. So I really wanted to pay homage to that in one of my own stories.
Do you still have the book?
Oh, absolutely. It's on my shelf, and it has a prominent place of honor.
Have you like taped it up and whatnot so because the pages keep falling out?
Yeah, it's all very carefully just sandwiched together to make sure that I don't lose anything.
All right. All right, let's talk about the Department of Final Fulfillment, a which helps ghosts move on to the afterlife by cooking their last meal. So how did you come up with that concept and that idea?
Well, I've always had a flair for witchy things, obviously, given my background that I've told you about. So I just like the idea of the kind of like a bureaucratic element of the afterlife, like how it works in like Beetlejuice, how there are like social workers that help you deal with being a ghost. And I just thought that it would be interesting that if there were different departments of this organization that help ghosts move on to the afterlife by different means. So cooking a final meal or giving them a final experience, talking to a loved one, things like that. And I've always really loved food and cooking. So it kind of just melded together from there.
Okay. Are you a fan of cooking shows, if I could ask?
Oh, absolutely. What? British baking what? Show, like top show right now.
All right, but they don't have any ghosts, though, cooking. So clearly, they're up the game a little bit, right?
Yes.
Let's go ahead and move on and talk here about another short comic. It's got a little bit of a mermaid love story, Beach Cute.
Yes, Beach Cute. I started this one just because I love mermaids, and I wanted all of my stories have a kind of queer element to them. I like telling stories from a bit of a different perspective than maybe, mm-hmm. Your very typical, straight cisgendered storytelling. So I just wanted to bring in a little bit of a romance story with two cute girls because I like cute girls.
All right. Well, if I can ask real quickly with that statement about Beach Cute, how's it been received by, the straight community or the gay community, or how have they accepted that, or what feedback do you get about that book?
Most of the time I have pretty positive feedback from the community. I have had people who have been really positive about it and just very excited to see, a queer story at, the comic shows that I do. Other times I have, some more conservative people coming to the table, maybe with their younger children, thinking that it was an inappropriate story. And then, I go on to explain it's not inappropriate. It's still an all ages love story, but, it just doesn't have your, straight counterparts to it.
Do you feel sometimes when somebody comes to the table and they're looking at that book, do you feel a little bit defensive, like you have to jump in advance and go, hey, wait a minute, this might not be for you? Because I mean, I think that might be the reaction of some folks. Or do you feel like, no, this, you guys kind of browse, and then if you have questions, I'll answer them?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Wasn't very phrased very well.
Yeah, no, I understand. I like to sit back and let people figure things out before I jump in to help them. Some people have approached me and have decided that they don't want that. They don't want to think about the story. And if those people come to my table, I don't really need to convince them of anything because I don't think I'm going to change their mind, with a 2-minute conversation at a convention table. That being said, I am always upfront about my storytelling as a queer person, and that if that people ask what it's about, I tell them exactly what the story is about, because that's the important thing that I'm trying to convey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure for every two or three people that are positive, you're always going to have that one person that's going to be a negative jerk no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, I live in a somewhat conservative state, Ohio.
Yeah,
so,
sure. Yeah.
So, every once in a while at local shows, I will get some side eye from certain people, but you just roll with it.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right, let's get back to talking about your projects and books. We kind of got off on a tangent there. The one that I wanted to ask about here that I thought was pretty interesting, new here, about an alien who's going to the very first day of art school here on Earth. is that a little autobiographical?
Yes, definitely. I think that everyone going to college for their first time feels a little bit like an alien. They feel a little out of place. That was one of the first comics that I ever wrote. Really? So, yes. So that one was a very early one in my comic creating career. So I just wanted to tell that story of, you know, the outsider, the person that doesn't fit in.
Do you, since this was the first book you said that you wrote, your first comic, do you sit back and look at the progress that you've made? Do you compare books as you maybe just out of the blue one day, or maybe before you do another project, do you sit down and go, okay, this is where I was at. This is where I'm here now, you know, set goals for yourself. Like how do you kind of compare and contrast your style from day one till now? Or do you even do that?
I do. I definitely do. I mean, I can definitely see growth in my work. And as time has gone on, I've always been an avid learner. I love learning new techniques, new skills. And every time I get an opportunity to pick up new information, be it from other comics that I like reading or from actual, you know, educational courses on writing or, you know, illustrating, you know, laying out comic pages, there, because there is a lot of elements that go into it, especially when you're doing all of the writing, illustrating, production, you know, so I can definitely see a marked difference between where I started and where I am now.
If I could ask about the writing process, how do you go about it? I'm always curious about that because I know some creators, they just notebook, man, and just start writing and writing and writing. And other folks I know have, you know, mapped out things like on index cards and move things around the table. So what kind of process do you have when you sit down to write a comic?
When I write, I am a big advocate for Google Docs because it makes it so easy to edit things. So I just go into, I start a new Google Doc and I write down all of my ideas that could potentially go into a story. Just give it like a really loose outline of where I want the story to go. And then I start breaking it down into smaller and smaller chunks until I'm working, you know, individual pages and individual panels on those pages.
Okay.
Just kind of narrowing it more and more with every step, until I have, you know, an outline of, you know, this panel is going here and this character is doing that and saying this. So it just kind of is like a whittling process.
So with you writing and also doing the pencils for many of your projects, and I don't even know if you can answer this question or not, but for me, I'm always kind of used to a two-person tandem, you know, somebody's writing and then the pencils are done by somebody else and then the inks and whatnot are done by somebody else. So I guess my question is it easier or harder to be both the writer and the penciler? And I don't know if that's a fair question to you, Claire. I apologize if it's not. That clicked in my head that to me, it would seem easier.
It's both. And okay. I be ambiguous that way. I'll explain. It's both because it's easier in that I'm not beholden to anyone but myself. And it's also harder in that I'm beholden to myself and everyone's their own worst critic. So I can sit there and critique myself to death before I actually get a story done. So what I like to do is I have a small group of trusted friends and, you know, family, people who I know I can go to with my story and kind of explain it to them. Mm-hmm. And that way I can kind of run the idea past them, tell them where I'm planning on going with it, what I'm planning on doing with different characters, and they can give me their feedback on what they think about it. So I try my best to have it be a little bit of a collaborative process so I don't get into my own head too much throughout the whole creation. And the other part of it that I really am grateful for is my partner, Tim, who is also a comic enthusiast and comic creator. We work together on a lot of our comics. I will bounce ideas off of him And he'll say, you know, well, if you approach it from this way, you know, you could tweak it a little bit. He has a real eye for layout. And he taught me a lot, actually, about the process of laying out comics pages. So between the two of us, we have a pretty good idea of how to lay out a comic or how, you know, to approach a story.
Mm-hmm. And you two have worked together on various projects, as you mentioned. So could we go back to start? How did you start teaming up with Tim?
Oh, yeah. We started dating. Okay. Yeah. And it just turned, you know, we both happened to be illustrators and working artists. We actually ended up getting hired at the same company. We knew each other before then, but we got hired at the same company and then we started dating. And once we started dating, you know, I was interested in doing comics and going to comic shows, and he felt the same way. So we just kind of became each other's editors and, you know, creative partners in crime.
Okay. You know, some of the things that he's worked on with you, if I remember correctly, a Beach Cute, right? Was that you two paired up, correct?
Yes. No? Yeah. Beach Cute, he helped me at Beach Cute and Apple Night and Department of Final Fulfillment,
Yep.
We work together a lot. I will do the writing because that's kind of the portion that I excel at more than he does. So I will write and pencil out my ideas, and I keep my pencils looser than maybe a conventional, like working on a regular comics team, the penciler would, you know, create very, you know, a tight pencil for mm-hmm. the inker to then go in and ink on top of that. But when we work together, I almost more create just full scale thumbnails where I create kind of like a looser design. And, you know, I will create the illustration, but then he goes in with his inks on top of that and kind of adds his own flair to it. So it creates almost a third art style that is like a fusion between both of our work.
Allow me to interrupt my conversation with Claire for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, and even collectibles. And if you want to make sure you don't miss one single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for their pool system, and they'll even throw in an additional 20% off pre-ordered comics. Man, that's a steal! So check them out online at wgcomics.com or jump on over to the store located at 5992 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and let them know that you heard about it from me, John Orlando, on the PVD Cast. Well, look, there's a couple other projects I'd like to talk to you about. The one that I saw that I'm a little bit curious about, The Cult. About a woman's attempt to save her husband from a cult. Did you have to do a lot of research for that?
I did not.
Okay.
Well, if you count listening to lots of podcasts and watching lots of documentaries.
No, that's research. That's research.
That's where a lot of inspiration comes from. The story actually came from a dream that I had. Okay. I am a very vivid and lucid dreamer, and I had this very disturbing dream one night where I was trying to break this person who ends up being, you know, my significant other out of a cult. And then when I get home to my apartment that night, I discover that he's there and he's trying to kill me. And then I woke up in a cold sweat.
No kidding.
Yeah. So yeah. it was a bit upsetting, and the best way I thought to deal with it was to turn it into a story. So thusly, The Cult was born.
All right, one final one, which just looks like it is just one fun read, and I mean that sincerely. Spiffy the Space Girl. You want to tell the listeners at home what that's all about?
Absolutely. That is actually the first comic that I ever wrote.
Really?
And that one was one that Tim and I teamed up on for a double-sided comic. So I did Spiffy the Space Girl on one side. I like sci-fi. And he did a Western on the other side of the comic. So Spiffy is about a space mercenary, very Han Solo-inspired tough girl who goes on a blind date at a cantina, and it doesn't go well.
Now, was the book, was it the, you started on one side with Spiffy and then the, on the other side was the Western, but was it like flipped around or no?
Yes, it was. So like when you flip it each way, it is, you know, the front of the book. So it makes it kind of an equal opportunity storytelling platform.
So you've had quite a few comics out and about in the public eye. Cleveland Scene Magazine, the Ohio City Tremont Observer. So have you had anybody go when they meet you, oh yeah, you did the comic in this newspaper or in this publication?
I'm not typically noticed from those publications. Okay. People know me from around the Cleveland comic scene and from conventions. I am one of the, I'm on the team that runs Genghis Khan, which is the local Cleveland indie comics show. It always happens the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So I'm on the planning committee for that.
Can I ask you a question about planning out a convention? Because I always find this also very interesting. What is probably the most important detail that a committee that's putting together Comic-Con like Genghis Khan has to consider?
I think the biggest thing that we have been focusing on so far for this year's convention is we had to switch venues. So location, location, location. We did a big search for, you know, the best spot that we could find to host Genghis Khan. We did find it. So that was taken care of. And then after that, you know, it's finding sponsorship so we can give everyone the best convention that we can put on for everyone. So, you know, finding people who are willing to back our crazy plan to have a local convention and just letting it fly from there.
And how has that gone for you guys? Like, has the local community been really supportive about, hey, this is not Wizard World, this is something independent, we want to help out? How's the local community reacted to that?
We have a really supportive community here in Cleveland when it comes to comics. Carolyn John's Comics, who is one of our sponsors, shout out. They are super supportive of the local Cleveland comic scene. They're constantly putting on events to promote Cleveland creators, and they do everything in their power to make sure that people know that there are some really awesome Cleveland comics people out there. So, yeah, it's been really great so far working with all of our sponsors. We're still looking if anyone wants to hit me up on that. but yeah, it's really great reaching out to the community and seeing such overwhelming support for what we're doing.
Yeah, and that's great. That's great. And speaking of another independent convention, you've been at Space many, many years. And in fact, you've been a 2015 and 2018 Space finalist. So yes. What's your feelings? How's it feel to get that accolade?
It's really exciting. It's nice to know that, you know, a group of my peers were the people who were selecting these awards. And it's really nice to know that my work has made an impact in the local creator community, you know, enough to get to that point.
Well, that's cool. So let's talk real quick. I have a couple other short questions, but let's talk a little bit about, since we're talking about conventions and whatnot, upcoming appearances. You are going to be down here in Columbus at CXC, the Cartoon Crossroads Columbus event, which is September 26th through the 29th. Are you excited to come down to CXC?
Oh, I'm so excited for CXC. This is my first year actually doing it. I was supposed to be there last year, and my sister ended up having her wedding on the same day, so I had to cancel. Can't really skip out on a wedding.
No, you can't.
So I'm really excited to finally come down for CXC. I've loved going to it the last few years that it's been going on, and I have felt like it's been a really good show. So I'm really excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, and there's tons of things going on over those 4 days. There's events at the Billy Ireland Cartoon Museum, things at OSU, things at the Columbus Metro Library downtown. So there's just a spattering of all kinds of things going on that weekend.
Oh yeah, it's going to be a very busy weekend, but it's full of so much fun stuff. I know that I will be at the Comics Creation Station. I will be at the Comics Creation Station on Saturday from 3:30 to 4 in the kids area. And it's just a place where people can come and make their own comics and have fun building their own stories. So I'll be there to help anyone who is interested.
That sounds like a blast. I like that idea. Make your own comics right there at the convention. Wow, that's fantastic. But anyways, besides CXC, do you have any other upcoming appearances on your calendar?
Yes, the weekend before in Cleveland, there is the Flaming River Con at the Cleveland Public Library. That is the Saturday before. That one is the queer comics and culture convention in Cleveland. And that one's going to be a really fun show too. There are a lot of local creators, a lot of local businesses, and everyone there is connected to the LGBTQ community. And it's going to be a really good time.
Yeah, cool, cool. Anything else on the agenda?
December 1st, Genghis Khan.
There you go. You got that softball. I threw right down the lane for you.
I was ready for it.
There you go. Well, let's talk a little bit, though. You do have a store, Envy, which has got tons of things, very diversified. Not only your books there, but you have stickers, you have pins. And so my question is, do you feel like that's super important for an indie creator to have a kind of a variety for folks?
I like having a variety, personally. I think that whatever you want to create, you should create. And I'm interested in so many different things that I have to find outlets for it one way or another. So, you know, having the stickers is a way of, you know, working on, you know, small ideas. Pins are the same thing. I love a good pin, so I like to contribute to everyone's horrible pin hoarding collections.
Okay, so it wasn't marketing. It wasn't marketing. It was just your own self-interest.
It is. It's a little bit marketing. Okay. I do like being able to have a little bit of everything for everyone. And it's, since I don't do certain kinds of art, it gives me a little bit of a broader reach to other, you know, interested people. And it gives me an outlet for all of my weird interests. It's like my pins are all are mostly like monsters that I really like. Mm-hmm. And focus on that kind of thing. So it's just a little bit of a, hey, I like this. Do you like this?
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. So you mentioned a few moments ago, I think when we were talking about Tim, he was talking about various different comics. So if you were to recommend any comics to the listeners at home, obviously besides your own, I mean, obviously those would be first on the list, but if you were to recommend any comics, maybe one or two real quick to the listeners at home, what would they be?
Let's see, the comics that I'm super addicted to right now. I love Saga. Unfortunately, it's on hiatus right now, but there's a massive back catalog that people can get into. The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl is always a favorite. Squirrel Girl is near and dear to my heart. If you dig far enough down in my social media, years ago, I did a Squirrel Girl cosplay that was pretty spot on, if I do say so myself. So definitely Saga, Squirrel Girl, anything from creators who are maybe not necessarily the mainstream, you know, dig around, find creators that are not necessarily your standard, you know, Marvel and DC creators, because there's a lot of comics out there that aren't necessarily superheroes and don't tell the same story. You can find any story in comic form. You just have to look for it.
I think that's great advice. That is fabulous advice, Claire. Well, as we're getting close to wrapping things up, let's talk about where folks can find you online. And you have quite a arsenal of social media presence. Twitter, Instagram, at Claire Collat. Facebook, did I see that there's a Facebook illustration page, correct?
Yes, there is a Facebook illustration page. If you want to get my latest and greatest, most current, you can find me on Instagram at Claire Collat, C-L-A-R-E-K-O-L-A-T. I'm the only Claire Collat around and definitely the only Claire Collat making art. So it's very easy to find me. I kind of have the market cornered on that name, thankfully.
Yes, you do. So, but you also have like Tumblr and
I have others, Tumblr. Right? I have a coffee where you can tip me if you want to give me money for my art, but not necessarily buy anything. And I also have my store Envy if you do want to buy some physical merchandise from me too.
And your website too.
Yes, and ClaireColette.com.
There you go. Well, you know what? I am somewhat disappointed Gus has not chimed in. I'm not going to lie. I feel like you let me down a little bit, Gus. I'm not going to lie to you, man.
He's just been so enthralled with our conversation, he didn't want to interrupt.
Well, you know what? Okay, I'll cut him some slack. He was so enthralled in our conversation. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. How about that? Well, Claire, thank you very much for coming on. I really, really do appreciate it. Definitely, folks, you know, as being here in Columbus, I'm going to push really hard to check out CXC or wherever you're at. If you see Claire, stop on over and say hello to her. Claire, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
And with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Claire Colette, talking about her various different projects. And if you're interested, definitely check out her website, ClaireColette.com. That's ClaireColette.com. And it's got all the links to her various different social medias, her blog, her store, and whatnot. And if you're local and you're going to be heading down to CXC here in Columbus, stop by and say hello to Claire. I'm sure she will appreciate it. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I need to start wrapping things up. I want to let you know where you can get in touch with me. You can do so a couple of different ways. You could shoot me an email. johnorlando@pvdcast.com is my email address. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter account is @pvdmvp. You can even leave me a message on the Facebook page. That, of course, being facebook.com/pvdcast. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, that you can get this podcast a variety of different places. You can, first of all, go to pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, to listen. Or through the various and multiple podcast platforms that's carrying the PVDcast. Whether we're talking about iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, Radio.com, the Echo Network, Pod Paradise, SoundCloud, Spotify. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Just search for PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, PVDcast John Orlando, into your favorite podcast player, and you're sure to find it. And when you do, please don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode, but also rate and review and tell folks about it. I would greatly appreciate it, all right? With that, I need to let you know that we have one more sponsor to plug, and that sponsor, of course, is Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/pvdcast. Audible has over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the chance to check out their service. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast, and you too can get a free audiobook. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous and stay independent.